Let's get started on the September 17th meeting of the Board of Public Works. I'm Lieutenant Governor Anthony Brown. I'll preside on behalf of Governor O'Malley, who's out of country traveling, participating in policy conferences in London. So I want to welcome everyone to the Board of Public Works. Thank you for your service to the people of Maryland and your interest in the work that we do. With that, let me see if the treasurer has any opening remarks, and then we'll see if the comptroller does.
Thank you.
I just want to say good morning to everybody. This is an amazing week. I mean, first the bicentennial, which was just mind-blowing, I think. And it sends out a message, I think, to the world that the United States was really finally founded here in Baltimore 200 years ago last weekend. Very, very dramatic story going out to people who really had not known anything about it other than a song before. And I think it's part of Maryland's duty, Governor, to keep it before the people in the future. And the other is, I'm no great athlete. I'm not the athlete up here. But this really is a tremendously wonderful week. So my congratulations to both of our fine teams.
Thank you. Ms. Comptroller?
Yes, thank you. And I heartily concur with the treasurer on both of her excellent points. And I got up this morning and read about our armed forces going to Africa for Ebola. And there are so many events going on that, frankly, are confusing and troubling and anxiety-provoking. So sitting with my wife, Annie, last night in front of the TV set and explaining to her what the magic number means and how significant this is, and she finally concluded after listening to me that, okay, I get it. The Orioles are now -1. And watching the O's and obviously switching back, since I live right on the D.C. line, to watch the Washington Nationals, it made me, it was in a quiet way, just an opportunity to say thank God for baseball and for giving an inspirational little boost to our wonderful region and state. And this morning I was walking Henry, my yellow lab, down the street, Sycamore Avenue, and I bumped into two different groups of moms bringing their kids up to the school bus. And in our area, it's rabid Washington Nationals area, so the kids had all their hats and Washington Nationals shirts on, and I'd look at them and say, how about those Nationals? And they'd go, yeah, yeah. And I'd say, but how about those O's? And they'd say, no, we don't like that. So I'm here to report that there is a budding rivalry developing between the Nationals and the Orioles that we will all have a lot of fun and entertainment with. I, of course, had to remind the kids that it's going to be an orange October. Trust me. None of this red October. Oh, but for my constituents that love the Nats, I will say I'm rooting for both teams. And but what a great activity for us to take a moment from all of the troubling things we read about all the time and just enjoy, frankly, last night, a cold beer and company of my wife and be able to watch America's pastime. Thank you, Governor.
Okay, well, thank you, Mr. Comptroller. And with that, why don't we just launch right into the Secretary's agenda?
Good morning, Lieutenant Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. We have 12 items on the Secretary's agenda this morning. We are prepared for any questions you may have.
I just have a question on items 10 and 11. Are these the first items that are coming through regarding the Baltimore City School Construction Program.
They are. Mr. Michael Friends from the Stadium Authority is here. He also has people from the Mr. Friends, you want to come up to the podium and bring whoever you want to bring up.
Sure.
Dr. Lever is here from School Construction. There might be here people here from Baltimore City, but this is exciting because items 10 and 11 are the first items the board has seen after the Memorandum of Understanding on the actual steps to go forward with renovating Baltimore schools.
Great. So just kind of give us a little sense of how things are going.
Things are going well, and it's correct that these are the first architect engineering design services for the first two schools of this program. I'm here with David Lever, whom you all know from the public schools construction program, and Gary McGuigan, who is the person who's actually shepherding this program for the Maryland Stadium Authority. I think I speak for both of them when I say that it's going well. We've had some early successes and some challenges. All of the parties have been working well together, however, and I think we're all working together toward the same goal, which is to build, 21st century schools for the school children of Baltimore and to get as much as we can out of the money that's been allocated. David, do you have anything to add?
Just a second, but it has been an outstanding collaboration. And we're working on many, many issues. The Stadium Authority is really taking the lead on the 21st century school. The public school construction program is very much involved in maintenance issues that affect the other schools, project delivery on capital improvement program projects, and other areas that relate to the schools that are not affected by the Stadium Authority funding. And altogether, it's been a very strong collaborative effort with City Schools, with City of Baltimore, and with the Stadium Authority.
Yes. Just remind us, how many schools will be either replaced or renovated as a result or because of the $1.1 billion bond authorization to the Stadium Authority?
Good morning. Gary McGuigan with the Stadium Authority. The original projection last summer was 30 to 35 schools, but it was based on very preliminary information. As we went through the feasibility study process, the renovation projects were coming in over budget, and we went through an exercise to try and maximize the number of schools, which we're completing right now and getting ready for our October 1st report back to the board, which have all the details on the number of schools and all the efforts of the last year.
So it'll be down from 35?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
And will you have a rollout schedule at the same time?
Like yes, ma'am.
When the first schools will open?
Yes. I mean, these two schools will open summer of 17. They're on schedule. The good news is the overall program is on schedule to end in 2020, but we have had some delays in the other year one schools that were over budget through the feasibility study process.
Okay.
Yeah, no, I had the pleasure of touring Waverly Elementary School yesterday with Dr. Johnson and other folks from the Baltimore school system and also Mary Pat Clark, the local representatives. And I know this is one that is only, it's the first new school, I think, built in 20 years or so in Baltimore, a $27 million effort. I think $15 million came from the state. But, boy, is that a good, if you're looking for a model, it's a pretty impressive facility. And the thing that caught my eye was that you visit some schools and you go in and ask the kids in K through 8, these are those grades, if you get in front of a classroom, sometimes when you ask anybody have any questions, nobody has a question. Not at Waverly. I'd stand in front of these first graders, second graders, and say, anybody have a question? Yeah, they got questions. How much do you get paid? Who are you? But the point was, there are hands up in the air, and the kids have a brand new school, and they have, the elementary school wears a blue shirt, and the middle school wears a purple shirt, or whatever. There's a high morale attributable in part to the construction and the facility and the light that comes into the school. And so, boy, members of the community and local officials are very, very happy, Dr. Lever, to see your steady hand involved in all this. Good luck as it continues down the road. It's very, very pleasing to see a world-class school. And it, obviously an area that one of the parents that was with us had gone to Waverly when she was young, but not that Waverly and not the other Waverly, but a third Waverly that was just, you know, almost a schoolhouse. So this is going to be a game changer. Thank you.
Thank you.
And congratulations to you, Governor, for your activity in support of this, and Governor O'Malley and the legislature, because, boy, is this there's a real model up there in Waverly. If that's what you're planning, I take it that's somewhat, am I in the ballpark as far as are we building schools like that?
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, they're all going to be at least LEED Silver certified. There'd be lots of natural daylight. But the plan is...
They had a grass roof.
Right, and that's going to be on some of the schools. And their learning environments also. So these will be transformational schools and efficient.
Thank you.
Anything else on items 10 or 11? Thank you very much.
All right, thank you.
Well, following up on the theme of how much do you get paid, who is the best person to speak to item 12 dealing with...
Rick Norman is here from the Office of the Comptroller. And this is an item for you, setting the salaries for the registers of wills for the next four-year term.
Good morning, Governor. How are you, sir?
Good.
Mr. Comptroller, Madam Treasurer.
Nice to see you.
Can you just explain how we arrived at the proposed increases in salaries for the registers of wills in all 24 jurisdictions?
Yes, sir. My understanding is the legislature a year ago passed law section 205 increasing the maximum salary for the register of wills before $114,500.
What was it first? Before?
It was $98,500, sir.
Okay.
And that represents a 16.2439% raise over the 98.5. The Register of Wills is broken up into categories depending upon the revenues, the amount of service they do for the counties. So we take that 16.2437 or 39% and we multiply it by the salaries that were scheduled 4 years ago. For Caroline County, for sake of argument, it went from 86.1 to 100.086. Mm-hmm. It's a 16% raise.
So this is essentially implementing the will of the legislature as reflected in Section 2-205.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Anybody else have any questions, comments on that one? That's all the questions I had.
Thank you, Governor.
Thanks. Are there any questions, comments, or discussion on any other items of the Secretary's agenda? Seeing none, Comptroller moves approval. Second by the Treasurer. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none. Secretary's agenda is approved. And now we'll go to the DNR real property. Good morning.
Good morning, Lieutenant Governor, Mr. Comptroller, Madam Treasurer. Emily Wilson with the Maryland Department of Natural Resources. We have four items on our agenda today. Be happy to try to answer any questions. And if I may, just to add on to the good baseball news, I heard a term yesterday that I loved is that we're in clinchmas at this time of year.
That's great.
Well, can I just say, just to build on what the comptroller said, if we are finally in the position where we have to make a choice, that would in fact be a very fine thing.
And it would be great for the Maryland economy.
But
let's bring on a Beltway series.
Yeah.
Why not? But. Be careful, O's fans down in my area. It gets a little heated sometimes. But
remember, happy Merry Clitchmas.
Right, exactly.
Clitchmas, yes. Why not?
I thought that was good.
Okay, any other comments or discussion on this agenda? Seeing none, Treasurer moves approval. Second by the Comptroller. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none. That agenda is approved. Let's.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. I see that DBM has no agenda today. So that brings us to the University System of Maryland. Good morning.
Morning.
Chairman, Lieutenant Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. I'm Jim Sterling from the University System. We have three items on today's agenda. I'd be happy to address any questions.
Any questions or comments? The Treasurer or the Comptroller?
Just recognize it's a great thing to see item 1C, the the biomedical sciences
start up
at Shady Grove starting up. Yes. Great progress for the university and for the Shady Grove campus and for the state of Maryland. And I look forward to seeing this progressing.
As do we.
Expediently.
Infrastructure investments that support a growing economy.
Right move in the right place.
Mm-hmm. Okay, any other conversation or discussion, questions? Okay, hearing none, Comptroller moves approval, seconded by the Treasurer. All those in favor say aye. Aye. Any opposed? Hearing none. Congratulations. Your agenda has been approved today. Department of Information Technology, good morning.
Good morning, Lieutenant Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. I'm Greg Urban, Department of Information Technology. I have four items on the agenda. Be pleased to answer any questions that you might have.
Any questions, comments? Seeing none, Treasurer moves approval. Seconded by the Comptroller. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? None. Congratulations. Let's move on to MDOT's agenda. Good morning.
Good morning, Governor, Treasurer, and Comptroller. Secretary Smith, on behalf of MDOT, we have 19 items. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Can you just have someone speak to item number one? Tell us what's happening there.
Good morning.
Good morning.
My name is Gary Lockett. I'm with the Maryland Port Administration as procurement officer. Good morning, Comptroller and Lieutenant Governor and the Treasurer. What's going on here? This is an item. This is a contract to demolish a railroad ramp at the Dundalk Marine Terminal. And it's basically a demolition job and removal of and disposal of reinforced concrete and steel and a platform to free up space at the port, you know, for additional trip shipping and items of such. We had five bids on this contract. Four bids were responsive. One bid was rejected for non-responsiveness. The second low bidder is Corman Marine Construction. There's an 8% MBE goal, and Corman Marine has plans to meet that goal with 8.15, and also they've committed to the 3% VSBE goal. The bid price was $1.3 million, which is basically 27% lower than the engineer's estimate. And the apparent low bidder, McLean Contracting, the bid was rejected as non-responsive for failure to comply with the MBE subcontracting participation goals as required in the IFB. And we issued a procurement officer's determination to that effect and rejected their bid.
So this is demolition work?
Yes.
This is part of a larger project to replace a platform?
We're not going to replace the platform. We're going to remove that platform, and it allows space for additional, you know, cargo shipping in.
Okay.
Because there's also a crane there that is going to be removed. That's on the agenda also. But
so is this more a matter of accommodating increased volume, or is it just removing a no longer functioning and necessary facility?
is to accommodate more space, okay, more room.
Infrastructure investments to support a growing economy.
Yes.
Okay.
Governor, if I could, I applaud the governor for bringing attention to this issue, because I look forward in the years to come to having a lot more attention paid to the procurement contracts that are brought before us. I don't really understand the explanation as to why the winning bidder, the low bidder, was disqualified. It strikes me as perhaps way too fine a point, particularly because they were, what, $300,000 less expensive than the contract we're about to vote on?
Well, the reason they were, the bid was rejected is because they, you know, failed to meet, to effectively meet that goal.
What was the goal?
The goal was 8%.
And what did they come up with?
7.21 when you factor in one of the items, one of the subcontracting items that they use. One of the subcontractors they use is as a supplier, and you have to apply a rule when you're dealing with suppliers.
Oh, so you guys came in. They applied and said, we have 8%. We've met the waiver. You then went in and said, oh, no, you don't. You have 7.2%.
Yes.
And that was because?
One of the subcontractors that they use does not meet the definition of they were a supplier and a wholesaler. So you had to apply a 60% reduction to that goal, to that
item. Well, you can see why it strikes me as a bit of a technical point, maybe meritorious, but the cost to the taxpayers for some pretty conventional work is $300,000. I'm not going to make a big deal out of it, but I applaud the lieutenant governor to even ask about it, because, trust me, there are opportunities for procurement to produce savings for the taxpayers, but we're going to have a different, I don't know whether we need reform in the statutes, as the treasurer was alluding to, but there's got to be some kind of opportunity for greater taxpayer savings so that we have the money to invest for the jobs that the lieutenant governor mentioned. I mean, this is not software or high tech or something. This is demolition work. Is the company that got disqualified, are they a local company?
No, the company, well, they're locally based, but the company is not from, not originally from Maryland based. It's not a Maryland based company. You mean
the one that got disqualified.
I'm sorry. That company is a local-based company.
Yeah.
I
applaud what you're
doing. Is the procurement process provide an opportunity for that disqualified bidder to be able to kind of cure or address that MBE deficiency, I call it deficiency, but the MBE issue, and stay in the bid process, or do we not offer that opportunity? Is there flexibility where you can make good on an MBE, or it will stick with MBE right now, MBE requirement when your initial bid doesn't meet the test?
Well, the way that we, the IFB documents in that particular form is set up, it's kind of restrictive, and it required that they complete this information, you know, exact. Mm-hmm. It's a decision, you know, internally that we work through to see if we warrant applying it, and we do apply it consistently.
Right, so you, and I think you ought to do that. So you applied it consistently, determined that one of their subs was not an MBE eligible, they fell below the 8. Do you have the discretion, the flexibility to go back to that bidder and say, look, we see that you fall below the 8% because of this particular issue. you have an opportunity to correct that if you want to continue to be considered for this bid. Do you have that flexibility to do that?
No.
Maybe I can help with that.
Sure. Just identify yourself.
I'm Peter Tolliver. I'm an assistant attorney general with the Maryland Ford Administration. And the thrust of your
inquiry... Let's have you step up to the podium.
Certainly. Yes. The thrust of your inquiry is what flexibility exists in where you have a firm MBE participation standard.
Yeah.
And there are two criteria that any contractor can avail itself of. One is to request a waiver, demonstrate that it's not able to find sufficient MBE participation. Or two, if a subcontractor is ineligible, the subcontractor can request an opportunity to modify its MBE participation schedule. So those are the two flexibility standards that are built into the procurement code.
So the answer then really would be yes on this. There was flexibility.
Yes, that's exactly right.
Right. Is this a time-sensitive procurement?
No.
What was the flexibility in this particular case?
The flexibility standard is when there are two principles.
No, I heard what you said, but in this particular case, I thought that this 60% rule was because the company actually was a wholesaler, not a labor provider.
Yes, the percentage.
So they can't change that.
No, they can't change that.
Right.
And that's a question. Not, it sounded like a statement. That was a. They can't change being a wholesaler to a.
Right.
So it would be a question of a waiver, would it?
That's up to the bidder. Excuse me. The it wasn't no waiver was requested,
right.
And the contractor did not request an opportunity to substitute an alternate contractor. It availed itself of neither of the flexibility standards.
Well, but.
And is the contractor, the bidder, presumed to know the two options?
Well,
or do we reach out to them and say, hey, just as a reminder, you've got these two options here. Do you want to exercise?
Yes, it's stated in the documents that are sent out with the solicitation, and all bidders are, apprised of this, through reviewing the bid documents upon advertising and at a pre-bid conference. So one of the head documents in the MBE forms that we use offers that. You can check off that you're going to meet the goal, or you can request a waiver, and then it goes into a different.
That's different, though. I mean, I know I'm harping on this. That's different. That's upfront, waiver, or you're going to meet the goal. The question is, you think you're meeting the goal, you submit your bid, only to find out that it was defective on the MBE component. And the question is, and I think the answer from a legal standpoint is, there is flexibility in the system where we could reach out to that bidder and say, your bid was disqualified because you actually didn't meet what you thought you meant, the MBE requirement. We're going to give you an opportunity to substitute whatever it is you need to substitute to meet the MBE and to be responsive to the RFP. Right?
It's possible to do that, yes.
It's possible to do that, yes. Okay. So and I think the point that I mean kind of jointly we're making here is we've got to be able to pursue overlapping goals in our procurement process. We need to pursue, nobody's suggesting that they should come in for a waiver, but we need to be able to pursue the MBE goals vigorously, but also assuming that the bidder is meets all the other criteria to get the best price for the taxpayers. And I think that's the point that the comptroller is making, the point that I'm making. You've got the flexibility to do it. Now, maybe I understand in this case, maybe the bidder would have said, no, we don't want any of those options. We're not going to ask for a waiver, and we can't. There's no change that we can make where we can satisfy. I understand that may be the case. So the point I think that is being made just more generally is as we approach procurements, let's achieve multiple goals simultaneously. MBE, yep. Cost, quality.
Okay.
Ms. Gunther.
Yeah, no, I applaud once again you're bringing this issue up because I think you hit the nail right on the head, and believe me, do I feel like I've been somewhat on a desert a little bit, and here's somebody who's coming along with a big bucket of water to say, you know what, we really need to look at this. I mean, my understanding from this stuff in front of me is that the company thought that it had complied with the MBE classification, and then because of the 60% rule, which I've never heard of, and the wholesaler versus the direct employer, which I've never heard of, but which apparently is in statute, they fell 0.8% below, and they were disqualified. I would be pretty frustrated if I were a Maryland company, and that was nobody came to me and said, you have a chance to cure this if you, you know, take care of this 60% rule. Very pleased the Lieutenant Governor brought it up. I'm happy to defer this and have somebody go back and take a look at it if you want. I understand the company, the Maryland company, protested this?
Yes.
That was the one that was disqualified?
Yes, they did.
So just can you, someone tell us what our options here? What are the board's
options?
Can
we just hear, I would like to hear from the Secretary.
Yeah, I mean, I asked someone to speak to the item if the Secretary or the Special Secretary need to speak to it.
No, on the MBE policy issue, yes. Good morning. GOMA, we actually worked with MPA to review this closely over the last week, and we did, based on the facts, remind the agency that there was flexibility and that there was some discretion here that was put in place by what we now call the 72-hour rule that council spoke about that addresses an issue where a contractor may include a subcontractor that is ineligible to do a portion of the work. And while a key determining factor that the port relied upon was the 60% rule, there is some indication that the 72-hour rule may have given them some discretion to allow the contractor to cure. And so what we did was we reminded the agency of this discretion. The law does give the contractor the right and maybe even the obligation to raise this issue, but in practice, agencies often will let a contractor know that they have an issue with the eligibility of a firm and give them the 72 hours to cure it. And so we have advised them moving forward that under similar circumstances, they should definitely consider the 72-hour rule.
So I guess maybe there's a question for our advisor, for the PAC. Is there a way to just more automatically, as a matter of course, have people have this notice before they go in so they know?
As a matter of fact, Secretary Hurley chaired the MBE policy work group yesterday, and we discussed just these very issues, discussing ways to keep bids in rather than looking for ways to throw them out, which is exactly what the Lieutenant Governor is advocating. And I think we've come up with some concrete remedies to make sure that in the future situations like this are clarified for our procurement officers, because they are looking at a million different issues when they're looking at these complex procurements. We want to make sure that they have a clear handle on these MBE issues and that we're able to keep these types of bids in similar circumstances.
And I will add that we're working closely with the Attorney General's office to develop statewide guidance to address both this so that they know best practice, even though the law may not require them to give this notice to the contractor, that they should give this notice to the contractor. This guidance will also address other issues that have come up with regard to waivers and checking the wrong box and what things I think that most reasonable people would call maybe a technical issue rather than a true intent to meet the goal that is stated in the contract. So we are going to be working with the Attorney General's office to put that out as quickly as possible.
I just have a question of my own people, actually. Is that really an issue in this case that the bidder did not know that they could request to substitute the contractor that they included in their bid with another contractor? Did they indicate that they, is there any indication they didn't know that they could do that?
Mr. Secretary, this is a very sophisticated bidder for this contract. It was well represented by a sophisticated procurement counsel. And the choice upon receiving a notice that the bid was rejected was to seek reconsideration of the status of the subcontractor as a supplier as a, versus being a service provider. And in this case, going back to Lieutenant Governor's question, did the bidder know about this? In this instance, in this degree of sophistication being present, it's safe to presume that this bidder knew of the availability of the 72-hour rule. And the focus was not to say, I want to get a substitute subcontractor. The bidder's focus was to say, please reconsider whether this fuel provider is a supplier versus a service provider. That was the option that entity took in this instance. In other instances, the kind of flexibility that we've heard about here shows a good path forward.
Okay. Sure, reminds me of, we're on the baseball theme, the new rule of catchers not giving a lane for the runner coming home. And depending on the nature of your challenge, whether or not you actually tagged the runner before they came home or whether you blocked their lane, could dictate the outcome of the appeal. Listen, I mean, I support this item. It comes under the engineer's estimate. Based on the representation that I just heard that a sophisticated bidder knew of their options, exercised for reconsideration of the determination as opposed to a substitution, I'm satisfied. I think that this discussion, and it sounds like you've had discussions about this and what the issues that it represents, I think this has been a good discussion. And because remember, we need all procurement personnel to understand and appreciate that there are several goals that we are trying to achieve simultaneously. Okay? We want to drive that MBE participation. Okay? We want to get the best value, the lowest cost and best value, emphasis on value for the taxpayers. We can do both of them simultaneously. And this is a type of example where it can be done. But again, I'm satisfied that that this was handled well.
Okay.
Thank you.
Could I just because I'm not particularly satisfied, and I remember seeing our great catcher, Caleb Joseph, in a mild way, as he tagged out the Toronto Blue Jay Rays individual, I guess his name was, at the plate. I thought that was a great play, new rule or no new rule. And the next inning, our player, I forget who, it was Caleb Joseph, came up, the catcher. And that Toronto Blue Jays pitcher threw a fastball right at his head. And almost, you know, could have killed him. And I wouldn't have blamed the O's for storming on the field and having a riot. And I wouldn't be so cavalier about this sophistication of this Maryland company. Nobody likes to lose a bid, particularly when it's $300,000 under this area. So I'm going to vote against this because my question is, what about the $300,000? If this were your money, would you really stand up before us and say, hey, we're going to go ahead and award this, even though it's $300,000 more than what we need to pay for it? Really?
I don't think they have discretion on this one, because the fifth bidder wasn't eligible.
Okay, so then we have the discretion. I'm going to vote no on the thing. I can't imagine there's any time sensitivity to this. You can go out and rebid it again.
Let me ask you this: did the award go to the second lowest bidder?
Yes.
See, because keep in mind now, I mean, if we don't approve it and it goes back out, you're not going to get that disqualified bidder to come back in because they've already said, according to counsel, that we're not trying to meet the goal. We're trying to convince you that
this subcontractor is eligible, but they've made a determination that they're not eligible, so they wouldn't be coming back.
I can see that, and I listened very carefully to the comment, but that's a hearsay conclusion. I mean, you think that's what, based on their sophistication, that is what they were intending, but maybe they weren't. And maybe it was, you know, maybe their counsel wasn't as up to date on the 72-hour rule as everybody thinks. I don't know. All I know is $300,000 is a lot of money. Mary Pat Clark, I mentioned her up at Waverly Elementary. She said the key thing to that elementary school, it's not even the new school or the new teachers or the uniforms or the kids or the involvement of the community. It's the after-school daycare that's provided by the school. She said this is revolutionary in our communities to have after-school daycare that is subsidized, and she said we couldn't have it without the state of Maryland. You guys have subsidized this daycare at Waverly and the one at some other school that was right next door. She said we fight for that thing. Every year they try to cut it out, but thank God for the state of Maryland because they provide the $170,000 a year that we need to keep those daycare school-based daycare open. Here we're talking $300,000. I don't know. I think you ought to go and rebid this thing and save the taxpayers some money. And that's the way to send a message to the agencies that we really take it seriously, that they have a balanced approach to procurement. I don't want to put you in a tough spot, Governor, because...
Yeah, look, I'm not in a tough spot. What I want is I want bidders to come in and meet the MBE goals. I want the bidders to come in and meet the MBE goal of 8% with a $900,000 bid, which is $300,000 less than what we're awarding it to. That's what I would have wanted this bidder, whether they're sophisticated or not. They knew that they didn't meet it. I wanted them to come in and say, you know what, we're not going to argue that we meet it. We're going to exercise the option. We're going to find the MBE subcontractor. We're going to meet the MBE goals. We're going to give you the lowest cost, the best value, so we can take $300,000 and support after-school programs. That's what I want. But I'm not going to get into a position where I'm making choices between after-school programs and MBE participation. We're going to do all of that in Maryland. Now, in order for that to happen, we've got to be aggressive and make sure that we are confident that in cases like this, that we are aggressively reaching out to those bidders and saying, okay, now, you sure now? Okay, whether you're sophisticated or not, okay, you got some options here. We've already interpreted that it doesn't meet the definition, but you can substitute. Do you want to do that, yes or no? Or you want to try that, yes or no? And I understand what you did, and I got it. That's why I'm satisfied with where we are. It's $500,000 below the engineer's estimate. It's not the lowest, but it meets the MBE goal, which the legislature wants, the people of Maryland wants, what this board has done a really good job. You guys have done a really good job here in the board in helping to drive those MBE numbers up. I think this conversation is important. But I just don't think that we need to reject this in order to make that point any further. Okay, let's take that one out, right? What do we have to do? We have a motion to take it out, right? You just separate it?
You can just take a motion on item one, the treasurer, if she wants to approve. Move to approve item one.
I don't even know what the motion is. What's the motion?
What she's saying is just take a vote on this one, if that's what you want.
All right, so you don't have to. Okay.
She can just make a motion to approve item one, and if somebody says...
Okay, so the treasurer is moving to approve item one, seconded by the lieutenant governor. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. That item's approved. Any more conversation or discussion or questions on the remainder of MDOT's agenda?
I have an item nine, please.
No, by the way, do not throw any fastballs at anybody's head.
Yeah.
Item 9.
Mr. Comptroller, I'll try to handle at least initially your concerns, and if I can't handle the whole game, I'll turn it over to Wayne Pinnell or someone from MAA. I had anticipated that there would be concern about having a one-bid response to the RFP, so I had staff go back and look at what was the response in the last RFP prior to this one, and there were actually three bidders that bid on the RFP that preceded the one that we're here this morning for, and of those, one of those bidders is the current provider of airside snow removal, and chose not to bid on this one because they were having all their resources committed to the bid that they had won with regard to airside. The other bidder in the prior bid elected not to bid because they felt that the requirements were too resource intensive and they couldn't meet those requirements. With respect to the one bid that we did receive, it is 6% less than the prior bid that was awarded, where we did have the competition of the three bidders. That really is the explanation for why we had one bid, and also the explanation as to why we're confident that we have a reasonable bid price, because it's less than the bid price of 3 years prior, and it is also that bid price was there was competition in connection with that bid. So there, at least, the overview explanations, if you have
sure.
more specific.
Sure. No, and I have nothing but praise for you and the way you run your agency. It's transparent. The bids are competitive for the most part, and you know that I'm a big fan of
sure.
Your leadership and the airport. So these questions, or the question I have about this contract, frankly, is a little bit unusual for me, because I have a lot of respect for what your agency is able to demonstrate on behalf of the public. But this is for snow removal services. It's a three-year contract. It's $20.9 million. 3 years with 1 2-year option. I don't have any problem with the company that won it. It's the fact that you mentioned that there was just one bid.
Right.
And apparently your agency or the airport went to 250 potential bidders, including 64 small business enterprises and 34 minority business enterprises. So despite these efforts, only one bid. And so that is caught my eye, because this is a bad economy we're in. It's a lethargic economy, and I understand that snow removal is probably more sophisticated than I think of, but the fact that 251 businesses were approached on this and they were too darn busy to compete for a $21 million state contract?
Well, don't forget that the requirements for the snow removal itself, they have to do it quickly and they have to do it thoroughly, and it does require a lot of equipment. So
and it ties up heavy equipment that
exactly,
can't
fit. Exactly.
I understand that. I think that's right. But
so I think that's part of the explanation as to why, even though we reached out to 251 potentials, that we did not get as much response as we had hoped we would get.
I appreciate the response that it's lower than the previous contract, but that's the same argument that I was given on Pearson with the Common Core contract. That was a $57.9 million contract, and I was told to, in effect, be quiet, because even though there was only one bid and there were allegations that that was basically tailored for the winner, it was 25% lower than the previous contract. But my question there is, how do we know? Because there's no back and forth between two folks. So I would give the benefit of the doubt to you, Mr. Secretary. I'm happy to vote for a three-year contract. But that two-year option, I think, is I think you should. I would recommend that you toss that in and just take a three-year contract.
Well, all you're really voting on today really is the 3 years, because if we tried to exercise the 2 years, we got to come back to you anyway. But we will be doing our evaluation, and if in fact we believe that if we rebid it, that we get a better deal, or if the contractor doesn't live up to the standard that we have to have in order to keep the airport going, or whatever. If you all, if the board wants to condition approval on that we don't exercise that option, that's all. It's still all things that you are in control of, whether you condition it or whether you just warn us that we're going to have a really good deal if, in fact, we're going to come back to exercise the option. That's certainly up to you. But I do think that the one safeguard that you have, Mr. Comptroller, I believe, is the fact that it was only 3 years ago it was competitively bid, and it was they were the low bidders then in a competition, and that now it's still lower than that bid. So I think we could have some confidence that at least for the 3 years we're getting a good deal.
Well, I'll just reiterate. I will vote for a three-year contract. I'm not voting for a two-year option. I don't know whether we have the authority to separate it like
Secretary
that.
Secretary Smith is absolutely correct. You are actually only voting on the three-year contract. The information is provided on the item that there is an option, but the Department of Transportation is not authorized to exercise that option until they would come back to you. This is a vote on the three-year contract.
And just in response, Mr. Secretary, the governor, Governor O'Malley, when we voted on this Common Core contract, made the observation sometimes when a company doesn't respond to a bid, that is a form of competition, even if you only end up with one bidder. It takes two people to compete.
I agree.
I mean, the Ravens, if they show up on the field and the other team isn't there, that's hardly a victory, I guess. I don't know. Maybe
I will take it, though. I will take it.
You will take it, yes. Yeah. But you know what I'm talking about. How do we know? I mean, maybe competition would save us 12%.
And that'll be 6 years down the road, too, from the competitive bid. So your point is well made.
Okay, well.
Just one very brief question. Did you look at reconfiguring? If the problem is they have to have too much equipment and be there and underbid significantly, the present contract in order to underbid this firm.
Mm-hmm.
Did you look at reconfiguring any of that? Is that at all practical?
I don't think so, but I don't really. I'll have to call on Wayne Pinnell for that, because that's a little beyond my.
Talk about reconfiguring the requirements of the contract.
Yeah.
I know that the contract has serious requirements,
like
because we have to get the airport open.
Right. No question about it. It's important to the economy and
right.
safety and everything else. But, like, I don't know, having breaking it into two or two, I don't know.
Good morning. Wayne Pinnell, the Chief Operating Officer for the Aviation Administration. Mr. Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. Yes, we have looked at the equipment.
Okay.
To give you an example, a call-out one, which would be just over 2 inches of snow, if they're forecasting it, the equipment that's required is approximately 80 pieces. We're asking the contractors who have bid to have 9 pieces of equipment staged at the airfield. These are 8 single axle dump trucks with blades and spreaders on the back for chemical sand salt application, and one double axle or tandem axle dump truck. So it's not a significant amount of equipment that we've asked them to store at the airport. However, I do recognize it's 9 pieces. In the prior contract, we didn't have that requirement, but operationally, we have required them to do that, and the contractor has done it. Of the 251, sir, that of those solicitations that went out through eMaryland Marketplace, we cannot say that all 251 of those companies would have had the qualifications to do this job. They were just in that code, so they're there. There may have been 5 companies who have the capabilities to handle a complex the size of BWI with the immediate response. But the equipment that we're looking at is literally, it's 9 pieces of equipment, 9 dump trucks.
Yeah, that's terrific. I understand that completely, and I see what the Secretary says, but that even raises more concerns for me, because one of the problems with these procurements, this is one of 17,000, I think, that have come before the board in my 8 years, is the lingering concern that the RFP, in fact, is, I'm not saying that's the case here, but it can be adjusted to benefit the incumbent. And to the extent you go out and compete and you say in this contract there are 9 major pieces, and God knows what the specifications were, but you see what I'm talking about. There's the opportunity for us, a bias to creep in for the incumbent or for some other company. And the RFP then ends up with a single bidder, and we're sitting here saying you got to vote for it because the snow is on its way. I don't know. I'm not happy with this situation. So
I
think it looks like I'm in the minority, but
no, I still have some questions. I'm not. I haven't reached a conclusion one way or the other. My question is: you said how many years ago was the current contract?
Three to
5 years ago. Where's there in that RP a requirement for a pre-staging equipment?
No, there was not.
And
however,
what has changed in the last 4 or 5 years? Is it the experience, the weather experience? I mean, what has changed?
It's a combination, sir, of all of the operational. What we found since the last contract was bid was that we needed the equipment on site, because there are times, and, you know, I don't want to just go back to the storms of 2010, but there are times when the equipment can't get to the facility on time. That's why we requested that, you know, operationally.
Okay, so now there are times, and that is sort of definitely hypothetically probably indisputable. Have there been an experience, though, under the current contract in the last 3 to 5 years where we have been at risk of not keeping the airport open or not opening, you know, has it impacted operations under the current contract? Are you looking at real sort of data that says, hey, we need to make a change in the requirements in this contract?
I would have to go back and look at that, Mr. Governor, and I can do that, but I believe that, yes, we have. We have had difficulty getting the equipment needed at the airport to clear the roadways in this case. We're not talking about airside. These are all the roadways and the parking lots that we have had that situation. So for the past 4 years or so, we have been requiring the existing contractor to stage that equipment there, and they have. And the existing contractor is also, for the record, I know Mr. Secretary said that it was 6% below the last bid. They're also an SBR. They're a small business reserve.
This company is an SBI, 25% MBE.
25%, and they have met their MBE goals in the past, and the plan that they gave us in the IFB will meet it again. I hope I've answered the questions.
No, my question is, what about the taxpayers?
In which way, sir?
In the way that we're voting on a $20 million contract with no competition, one person, one bidder, has a great relationship with you guys because he's the incumbent, and there's no competition. So how do we know whether the taxpayers are getting a good deal here? We don't. And my humble opinion, having been on the board for 8 years, the only way we're ever going to change that is to start saying, go back and rebid it and get some competition. And if you have to change your RFP in order to do that, do it. But anyway, I'm appreciate the indulgence of the Lieutenant Governor, and I described him as water on the desert, and I continue to think that, and I have great expectations that down the road we're going to see a lot more tightening up as far as what, not so much what were areas we're spending money, but what about the money? Does it deliver at a most efficient rate what people would normally expect of us? And in this instance, I think most people would say snow removal, $20 million, 3 years with a two-year option. I mean, I mentioned 17,000 contracts. I can't think of a single instance where an option in my 8 years has ever been rejected. It's always presented as, you want the snow removed? Don't make us bid it. Let's just renew the option. And we put in that situation 100% of the time renew the option. So this is an unfortunate, I guess, situation, because I started this by saying, and I continue to have the utmost respect for the secretary and for the airport, frankly, for the port also. I'm not upset with them. I'm upset with these situations. And I hope that that water, Lieutenant Governor, is sitting right in front of me. I just want to drink a little bit of it and say, gosh, guys, let's get some competition. Two people. We need it. And thank you very much.
So, look, I accept the representations that you've reached out to contractors and they advise you that they've got a lot of work at BWI, that the requirements are pretty stringent, and quite frankly, they ought to be stringent, because BWI, Thurgood Marshall International Airport, is an economic engine for the state of Maryland. And I got to imagine, I didn't ask the question, but every hour that that runway is closed costs a lot of dollars and inconvenience to Maryland. So I think that it's certainly snow removal. We want to make sure we got the best and the right quantity out there. So I'm fine with that. The fact that you come in 6% lower than 3 or 5 years ago with the additional requirement actually speaks volumes to me. I don't know what the debate was 3 or 5 years ago at this board about the dollar value at that point, but apparently the board approved it. It seemed to be reasonable at the time, that $13 million or whatever it was. Now, we are approving $12.45 million today, not 20, right? It's 12.45. And we can't approve it without the two-year option. The concern I have about the option is that we're all busy people, and when you look at your stack of your inbox and you say, okay, I can't do everything today, this one's got an option, so, and this one doesn't, so let me work on the one that I better get teed up for the Board of Public Works, because there's no option. The option one is sort of like, well, if I don't get to it, at least they got the option. And then I do share the comptroller's concern that, you know, 3 years from now, you know, with, you know, climate change, which I do think is occurring, and that, you know, we don't want to be in a situation where we've got to approve a contract because we have no other option and we've got snow on the way. I'm certainly willing to approve this without the two-year option.
Does that change the bid or the contract? Does that create any problem?
All the board does on these items with contracts, they list the option for information
right.
for you, so you know that it does.
But I assume the bid was in response to a contract that incorporated an option.
Like Mr. Greg Bedward and the council to come up and explain it. He has looked into it. I think he feels appropriate with approving the contract without the option. But Mr. Bedward has looked at this. And, yes, I think that the contract has to have the option remaining in it, because that's how it is. But it's no
You don't have to exercise. I don't doubt that. And that we can say don't exercise it, come back to us. But if we're talking about rewriting the contract, essentially.
Right. I think that's what Mr. Bedward would advise, if you want.
Good morning. Greg Bedward, counsel to the board. No, today the board, if it chooses to approve the contract, it would not be rewriting the contract at all. In practice, it would be approving this three-year contract with the options, but in practice, the agency would have to come back for the board's approval to actually exercise the options. So under the current proposal, the board would not be amending the contract, making any change at all to the contract.
I'm not sure I understand.
But if you actually wanted them to exercise the options, that wasn't possible in there, I think that there
Correct. If the board's will was to actually remove the option from the contract, that would be a change which is not within the board's authority today. That would be up to the agency
to
go back
this
now.
Precisely. Renegotiate.
When is the end of the current contract?
The expiration on the current one, I believe, is the end of October. Is that correct? End of October, sir.
Yeah. So we're kind of where the comptroller wants us not to be, and I agree, 3 years from now, a month and a half away from the expiration of a contract and not having what the board may think is not sufficient options or insufficient options.
I know that it's not the same as having us go back and rebid this as just a three-year straight contract, but there would be no question that we're going to note that we can't exercise the option, you don't want us to exercise the option, and that we won't exercise the option, and we'll rebid it in 3 years. I think postponing it is could depend upon the weather. I mean, the procurement takes, as you well know, takes a long time. And
I have been, I've presided over this board on a number of occasions, have a great deal of confidence in the manner in which staff brings back to the board sort of the record, the historical conversation around these actions that we take. My question is, if we approve this, what is in place to make sure that the agency remembers what we did so that a year out they're already going to bid, and that the board is reminded 3 years from today that when you approve this, this is what the concerns were raised and the requests that were made of the board.
Yes, sir. If I might suggest, the board can direct that the airport bring back the option at least 6 months before it is to take effect. So in case the board decides not to approve the exercise of the option, there will be ample time to rebid.
But we can definitely put this in our tickler system. We do have reminder systems, so we will.
What is a reasonable amount of time to bring it back? How long does it take to solicit and
We can meet the 6 months, sir.
Six months.
To answer the treasurer's question, I have talked to the contractor, and they are not concerned about a price change without the option. So I think that answers the question you're asking there.
But we can't.
No, they were asking a technical question.
Yeah.
Well, here's the problem. Despite our best efforts, none of us may be here.
None of us.
Yeah. You guys may be here.
We've got some great civil servants that are going to continue to be working for the state of Maryland. But that's why I was asking the question about.
I'm glad I'm more optimistic than the comptroller.
My 15 and 14-year-old hope I'm still here, sir.
Okay, I
may never see snow again, either.
So I'm going to make the motion to approve with the requirement that the department come back 6 months prior to exercising the option. Anybody second?
And with the understanding that the board is not... does not plan to
I understand.
Seconded by the treasurer. All those in favor say aye. Aye. Opposed? One opposed? Any other? Thank you. So item number 9 is approved. Any other items for conversation, consideration? The comptroller moves approval for the remainder of the agenda. M.Dot agenda, seconded by the treasurer. All those in favor say aye. Aye. Any opposed? Hearing none. Thank you. Let's move on to the Department of General Services and
I know that I think we still have Reverend Dr. A.C.D. Vaughn from Sharon Baptist here on item number 22, which is a grant to Miles Washington Family Support Center. Certainly welcome. Former Delegate Hank Keller, who's here on item number 30, I believe. Is that right? Yep, he's over here to the far right here. Number 30, which is an acquisition by Cornerstone Montgomery Incorporated. So let me ask if former Delegate Hank Keller, are you interested in appearing before the board? No. Okay, well, welcome.
Just interested in our approving the project.
Thank you very much. And is Dr. Vaughn interested in presenting to the board on item 22 or anyone else that would like to speak to the Miles Washington Family Support Center? You are welcome. Sir, good morning.
Good morning. Happy to be here. And I have to say a word just about the Miles Collins Center. It is a project of Sharon Baptist Church, of which I'm senior pastor, and I'm blessed now to have been serving in the pastorate for 57 years. And this is a thing that we're really doing for the community. A house that's right across the street from our present property. It has already been declared historical because Annie Williams Brown formerly lived there. I think she was born there. And of course, she was the first Bess in Porgy and Bess. She died last year. And so her father was a deacon at our church in my boyhood. I'm blessed to pastor the church that I grew up in. And so I know it quite well. We got the property from the city with the hopes of developing a family support center. And of course, we are in the midst of renovating it now. Hopefully it will become an outreach center that will deal with the drug and also deal with unwedded parents and try to bring them on an upscale base in terms of living and becoming good citizens to the community. This is a desire of the church and a desire of my heart that we would do it. We invested money in the project and ended up with a bad contractor who ran off. But then the city, through then Mayor Kurt Smoke, and recently through the help of the state of Maryland, y'all gave us a grant of $175,000. And we're in the process right now of waiting for the contractor to get the new drawings, and they're ready to go to work. And hopefully we will see this come to fruition in a neighborhood where it's well needed. We see it as the church's investment in itself when it invests in the neighborhood. Our church is blessed because next year Sharon will celebrate 130 years of being in a neighborhood. In the 130 years, we've only had four senior pastors, and I've been privileged to know all of them but one. And of course, I always tease the congregation. I know something else, too. I know who the next one will be who will be funeralized. It'll be me, because the rest of them have gone on. But all of them made noble contributions. Out of our church came Dr. Miles Washington Connor, who was the early developing president of Coppin State, now University. And the church has been there. Again, the second pastor, Dr. Bill Elliott, served in the probation department of the city of Baltimore. He was an early Yale graduate. In fact, I have his picture when he graduated in class of 1901 from Virginia Union. But we've always seen it as our responsibility to minister to the people that we serve. And we take pride in the fact if we can see this come to fruition, that it will be a noble contribution to the neighborhood. That's what we're about.
Well, Pastor Vaughn, thank you very much. You've been not only a spiritual but a ministerial leader to not only your congregation, but the difference, the impact you have in the community in the city of Baltimore. So we appreciate this project and your role in this. And I know and perhaps the Comptroller Treasurer want to add something, but I think all of us are pleased with the work that's being done here.
Thanks.
Thank you.
I'd like to present the items for DGS. We appreciate anyone that wants to come to the board speak before us. We would certainly acquiesce, and we thank Dr. Vaughn. Good morning, Lieutenant Governor, Madam Treasurer, and Mr. Comptroller. I'm Bart Thomas, Deputy Secretary for the Department. The Secretary is out doing great service today again. The Department has 37 items on our agenda, including one supplemental. We have multiple people here visiting today to see the board in action. Dr. Vaughn, we appreciate him, the delegate. We also have Laurie Argyles from the Watershed Study in Prince George's County. We have John Spearman, Mark Arzenot, and Clive Savoy from here from Prince George's County Hospital System, Gwen Zecca from St. Luke's Home, Stuart Moss for the Writer Center, Sterling Brunson and Enda Manns from the Board of Directors of the Fayette Street Outreach Organization. We'd like to recognize they took the time to come here today. With that, we'd be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Right, and I'll invite whoever on any of these items would like to briefly present the board. Present to the board. You're welcome to do so as well. Okay, seeing none, hearing
I just
none.
Put in just a personal note. Mm-hmm. I'm not exactly sure what it was. It might have been 20 years ago or so when Delegate Francho, I believe, co-sponsored with us from District 16 and 18, the Writers' Center, for the first time on Wall Street. That's good to see it going strong. And the other, Alice Ferguson, the other wonderful institutions.
Mm-hmm. It's a pleasure to have Delegate Hank Heller with us. He's responsible for more of the education policy in the state of Maryland. And other folks understand. Well, other folks take credit, Hank, but you did a lot of the work. And I'm particularly grateful to you for what you've done for the state of Maryland. I would like to take just a moment and salute DGS Secretary. I'm a huge fan of and delighted the Deputy Secretary Bart Thomas is here. But you'll recall several months ago, we authorized the sale of the historic post office building on Church Circle. And then we agreed to lease back and help the U.S. Postal Service stay there while we are the owners. And ultimately, I think the Postal Service is going to move on, and we're going to use that building for the state's purposes. And it is just about one of the most beautiful, visible buildings with remarkable design characteristics. It's from a bygone era. God bless our new buildings, but they're not anything as historic and beautiful and meaningful as far as the aesthetics. And I think it plays a big role, frankly, in Annapolis. And it has been down on its luck a little bit with the post office, I guess, because of their budget problems. But it's been looking a little rough around the edges, frankly. And that is probably deferred maintenance or indifference. I'm not sure. But I was pleasantly surprised, Madam Treasurer, walking by it the other day to see it looking so great. I mean, it's amazing what painting a flagpole will do. Putting a little bit of landscaping in, painting the putting the fresh coat of paint on the windowsills, and I guess they did a power washing. But I'd like to thank Mr. Thomas and Secretary Collins for doing something which is
very, very laudable. And I complain myself on this board a lot, I guess, about different branches of government and whether you can doing the right thing and you're delivering stuff that's efficient. You are.
Thank you.
You're doing great service. And please continue the faithful restoration of the old post office. I think it sends a very positive message.
I'll certainly tell the secretary. It was under the secretary's direction. He walks the city streets and he always reminds me, you must look up. You can't keep looking down. Look up. And he said, as soon as we get title to that building, I want it freshened up. And he did. And we did. So we thank you for that.
Tell him not to forget the Treasury building.
Well, it looks like something's going to happen to those stairs, which were otherwise crumbling. We appreciate very much, particularly since we hold the insurance for
Understood, and you wear the high heels, and I don't. So, thank you.
Great. Any other comments, questions, discussion on DGS's agenda? Hearing none. Comptroller moves approval. Seconded by the Treasurer. All those in favor say aye. Aye. Any opposed? Hearing none. That agenda item is approved. And that concludes our business for the day. Move to adjourn the September 17th meeting of the Board of Public Works.
No.